this letter to the Philippians has kind of popped up for us before. And one of the things that I think is amazing about it is a couple of things. There's sort of twofold. First is just the way that the Philippians treated St. Paul. And you could see in a letter like this that these were actually letters, personal correspondences between things that happened between Paul and these ancient churches that he ministered to. And in this particular situation, they were one of the only ones that helped him. And they didn't just help him once, but they continued to help him and pour out their charity towards Paul because they believed in the gospel and they believed in his mission. And he has those amazing, amazing words that he knows how to live in abundance and without. And it's an amazing, amazing part of this gospel because we know that St. Paul suffered a lot in his ministry, but before that was relatively comfortable as a Pharisee and as a Jew. But then there's one of those accounts that we read where he's like, oh, I forget all the numbers of things, but it's like, this many times I was stoned and this many times I was beaten with rods and I was shipwrecked 3 times. And he goes through all the hardships that he endured. But he says that I have learned the secret of being well-fed and of going hungry, of living in abundance and being in need. I have the strength for everything through him who empowers me. That is his secret. In good times and in bad, no matter what the situation, he can do absolutely everything through Jesus Christ, whether he gets his way or he does not get his way. I've said this before, but I think it's so unbelievably important to continue to remind ourselves of, is that when we look at Jesus Christ crucified on the cross, he has already conquered sin and death. We have already won. Do we still have to deal with difficulties and evils on this earth? You're darn right we do. But we have already won, and we accept the gospel that men like St. Paul work so hard to preach so that we're already oriented towards heaven. We're already oriented towards it. The things that happen on this earth are fleeting things. And the gospel today is a little bit more confusing and complicated, and I thought about this a little bit too. So if you're ever really, truly wondering if you read something in one of the gospels or one of the letters, this is just kind of a helpful tip. And, you know, some of you, I'm sure, already know this. But if you just go on the computer, if you search, you used to have commentaries, Bible commentaries, and you would kind of look through them. But nowadays, always put the word Catholic in the search. I implore you do that. But like Catholic commentary and put the verse, or you could even say something like dishonest wealth. And you will probably get this verse, these verses that are like kind of complex and a little bit confusing to understand. And so what Jesus is kind of talking about in this particular situation is that as we have the context that was leading up to this particular spot, we have the landowner situation that was occurring right before this. And so one of the men says, oh, I can't do the labor. So what he does is he kind of lessens debts of his other debtors and stuff and asks them, he kind of makes friends with them by changing their debt so that when he can't do the work, they basically come to his aid and help him. And then Jesus kind of prizes that mentality in that particular gospel because he's saying that was a wise and prudent thing to do. He made friends. So he sort of used the wealth dishonestly to make these friends that would come to him in his aid when he couldn't do what he was supposed to be doing. And so when he talks about dishonest wealth, probably the best example that I could think of and the best example that I've read about is Zacchaeus, the tax collector. So Zacchaeus, once he sees Jesus, of course, everybody knows that the tax collectors back then were cheaters and liars and all of these different things. So he made a lot of money dishonestly. But then, after he's enlightened by Jesus, what does he do? He says, I will give half of my money to the poor, and I will repay anybody that I wronged fourfold, I believe it was. So a lot of the money that he made dishonestly, he ends up using for the glory of God in the end. And remember, there's always something deeper to Jesus. He's not saying make a dishonest living, but he's saying some of you have probably made money in a dishonest way. But now that you have that money, what are you going to do with it? You know, and like Zacchaeus, he made reparation for that money by paying people back that he really owed, and he gave them a lot of the money to the poor. So even that money that he came by dishonestly, he was able to kind of completely redeem himself by switching around that wealth and giving to those who really needed it the most. And I think all of us, anybody who's ever been a manager before, knows that next part. Who is the person that you ask to help you when you know you need a mission to be accomplished for sure? You ask the one that's always reliable. They're the ones that like always gets the job done, always on time, and always does the thing that they need to. You don't tend to ask the person that's late, complains a lot at work, rarely gets the job done, you know? And it's the same thing when he speaks of dishonesty. It's like the person that's always honest and is always forthright and that is always following the truth is really the one that you entrust things to, because you really do trust them to follow through to get the job done. And so even if it's a small matter in which they prove themselves by doing those little things, then you can give them much larger because they've already proved themselves in the small things. But again, those who can't get all the other things done, it's hard to ask them to do something bigger. Just a quick personal example, since my parents are here, it reminded me of this. When I was younger, and throughout my whole life, for some reason, when I get up in the morning, I get up. That's my mom and dad. It's like we are awake and we're fully alert human beings. But some of you might be a part of the world where you could barely wake up, or you're like a zombie for quite a while until maybe you have your first cup of coffee. So my sister would refuse to wake up in the morning. I mean, my alarm would go up. My parents wouldn't even have to come to my room. I'd be in the shower. I'd be ready to go. My sister, there was one time my dad had to take a Dixie cup full of water and actually splash it on my sister's face and come back multiple times to drag her out of bed. Well, if you had a task that required getting up very early in the morning to take care of, like maybe being the sacristan of the church, my sister would be your last choice. And me, who became a sacristan one time upon my life, you know, it makes sense because I was capable of doing it. And so that's kind of the Lord what is telling us today, is like, if we prove ourselves in truth and honesty, then we prove ourselves trustworthy. And aren't those all the people that we actually want to hang out with? Usually we want to hang out with somebody dishonest if we're doing dishonest things. We want to keep the company with those who hold to the truth. And the truth is Jesus Christ. He's the way, the truth, and the life. God bless you all.